The spit landed on her cheek before she could blink. Warm, slow, deliberate. It slid down the curve of her jaw like a sentence being written in a language meant only to humiliate. And every soul standing in that frozen courtyard heard the exact moment it happened. Not because of any sound, but because of the silence that came after it. The kind of silence that presses down on a crowd like a boot on a throat. Vasha did not flinch. She stood in the snow, outside the great iron gates of Stonefell Keep, bare-shouldered in a servant's dress, despite the bitter cold that had turned the surrounding pines into white monuments. The wind moved through her dark, tangled hair, and did nothing to warm her. Her feet were wrapped in worn cloth boots that had long since soaked through, and she could feel the ice beneath the soles. The kind of cold that starts in the bones and works its way outward, like a slow curse. She did not wipe the spit away. That was the thing people would remember. Not the act itself. Cruelty is common enough in a kingdom like Durmholt, where power is measured by how many wolves kneel at your feet. What they remembered, what they told in hushed voices for years afterward, was that she did not wipe it away. She only turned her grey eyes, those strange, fog-coloured eyes that seemed to hold weather inside them, up to the face of the man who had done it, and she smiled. Not the smile of submission, not the smile of someone swallowing humiliation with grace. It was something older, something patient. Alpha King Vordrek of Durmholt sat astride his black warhorse at the centre of his retinue, draped in wolf fur and armor that had been forged from the metal of defeated packs. He was enormous, broad-shouldered, and carved from what seemed like stone, and contempt in equal measure. His jaw was sharp, his dark eyes flat and cold as the lake at the edge of the Mirewood in deep winter. He was, by every measure his court used, magnificent. He looked down at Vasha the way a man looks at mud on his boot. Did I give you permission to look at me? His voice was low, almost pleasant, the way dangerous things sometimes are. Behind him, his 12 Royal Guard wolves shifted on their mounts, their breath rising in white plumes in the morning frost. The banners of House Vordrek, a black wolf devouring a silver moon, snapped in the wind above them. Vasha said nothing. That infuriated him more than any answer could have. She had been brought before him on the accusation of an elder from the Greywood Pack, old Brenoth, whose rheumy eyes had caught her bathing in a stream 3 nights past, and claimed he had seen something in her that made his wolf recoil. That was how it had been phrased in the summons that arrived at the servants' quarters of Lord Halvek's estate. Something unnatural. The Alpha King had ridden out himself at dawn, not because she mattered, but because he was hunting, and she had become, for a moment, adjacent to his path. He had looked at her for less than 4 heartbeats before deciding what she was. A rogue, he announced to no one in particular, the word falling like a stone into still water. No pack mark, no alpha bond, feral and rootless. He tilted his head. Tell me your name, creature. Vasha, she said, and her voice was so calm it made a horse at the back of the retinue step sideways. Vasha, he repeated it, as though tasting something unpleasant. Not even a house name. You don't belong anywhere, do you? He pulled his horse closer, until the beast's hot breath hit her face, and he looked down at her with something like intellectual curiosity, the way a man examines an insect before he crushes it. What are you doing on Durmholt land without a pack bond, without a master, without... I am no one's to master, she said quietly. The silence that followed was the second most memorable silence of that morning. Vordrek blinked. Then his face arranged itself into something that was almost a smile, but was in fact much worse. Hold her, he said to his guard, and 2 wolves dismounted before the words had finished leaving his mouth. They grabbed her arms, and forced her to her knees in the snow. She went down without resistance, and that, again, was the thing that unsettled people. She did not fight. She did not cry. She knelt in the ice and looked up at him with those gray eyes, and she was still smiling, faintly, as if she knew something the rest of the world did not. Vordrek dismounted. He walked toward her slowly, letting the crunch of his boots on the frozen ground do the announcing. He stopped before her, close enough that his shadow fell across her face, and he reached out and gripped her chin in his gauntleted hand, forcing her head back. "You are nothing," he said. "Less than nothing. A rogue wolf is already lower than a pack omega, but a female rogue." He made a sound of disgust and released her chin with a small shove that snapped her head to the side. "You are the lowest form of wolf kind. You should be culled. You should be driven from this territory and left for the winter to take." She raised her eyes back to his. "Is that your decree, Alpha King?" she asked, and her voice was still that same impossible calm. Not hollow, not numb. Calm. Like deep water. Like the bottom of a lake where the cold sits without apology. He studied her for a long moment, then, and this was what no one could explain afterward, not even Vordrek himself, who was not a man given to excess, he spat on her. It was not rage. Rage would have been understandable. It was something smaller and uglier than rage. It was disdain made physical. The gesture of a man who wants to mark the exact boundary between himself and something he considers beneath contempt. Vasha felt the warmth of it on her cheek. She did not wipe it away. She looked at him and she laughed. Not a performance of laughter. Not the brittle sound of someone trying to appear unbothered. It was real, low and genuine, rising from somewhere deep, and it had an edge to it that made even the horses uneasy. Several of the guard wolves exchanged glances above her head. Vordrek's face changed. Something moved through it that he would later refuse to name. "What?" he said, very quietly. "Are you laughing at?" Vasha tilted her head. And for just a moment, just a fragment of a moment, so brief that two of the 12 guards later argued about whether they had imagined it, her gray eyes shifted. Not in color, exactly. More in depth. Like the fog suddenly revealing that behind it was something vast and ancient, and entirely without mercy. "Nothing," she said pleasantly. "You should go, Alpha King. You have a long road back to your keep. And the snow is getting heavier." He stared at her. She stared back. "Exile her," he said finally, turning away. "Past the Meyerwood boundary. If she is found within Durmholt's borders again, kill her on sight." He mounted his horse without looking at her again. As the retinue rode away, the clatter of hooves on frozen ground, fading into the white distance, old Brenoth lingered at the edge of the road. He was the only one who stood still, watching the girl rise slowly from her knees in the snow, unhurried, precise, brushing ice from her dress with the air of a woman who had merely sat down and was now choosing to stand again. She finally lifted her hand and wiped the spit from her cheek. And Brenoth, who was 83 years old and had served 4 Alpha Kings, who had seen wars and cullings, and the kinds of things that unmake men's faith in goodness. Brenoth felt something move through him, something cold and enormous, like a door opening somewhere deep in the earth. He thought, "What have we done?" But he said nothing. He was, after all, old and afraid, and the road home was long. The Meyerwood at midwinter was not a place living things chose. The trees grew wrong, too close, too tall, their bare branches threading together overhead into a net that caught snow and held it so that walking beneath them was like moving through a held breath. The cold here was different from the cold of the open plains. It had texture, It pressed against the skin with intention. Wolves avoided it. Even seasoned trackers from the Durmholt pack made wide circles around its edges. There were stories. There were always stories. About what had once lived here. Before the Alpha Kings of Durmholt had drawn their borders. And named their territories. And decided that the Mirewood was simply a boundary marker. Useful for indicating the edge of their authority. And nothing more. Vasha walked into it without hesitating. She had been walking for 3 hours, her cloth boots long since useless against the wet, her dress stiff with frost at the hem. The wind had died when she entered the trees, which should have been a comfort, but wasn't. Silence in the Mirewood felt earned rather than peaceful. She walked until the last grey light of the afternoon was indistinguishable from the deeper dark gathering between the trees, and then she stopped beside a frozen stream. And she stood very still. And then she changed. Not the way a pack wolf changes. Not the gasping, bone-cracking violence of a wolf shift that every Durmholt pup learns to endure. Not that. This was slower. This was the way a tide comes in. Inevitable. Massive. Unhurried. Her shape did not break. It expanded. She grew. And kept growing. And the sound it made was not the tearing of a shift, but something older. The low resonant crack of ancient ice moving. Of something enormous turning over in deep water. What stood in the Mirewood when she was done was not a wolf. Wolves are mortal things. They have pack hierarchies and mating bonds. And they answer to Alpha Kings, because the Alpha King's blood is the strongest wolf blood. And wolf blood, even at its strongest, is a single, contained flame. What Vasha was not a flame. Lichens are to wolves what the ocean is to a river. Not larger, exactly. Not just more. Something of a different category entirely. Old blood. Blood that predates the pack systems and the alpha hierarchies, and the carefully constructed world of ranked submission, that the wolf kind had built for themselves. Lichen blood is the original thing, the unnegotiated thing, the thing that existed before anyone decided who had the right to spit on whom. Her lichen form was enormous, twice the height of the largest Durmholt warrior, white as the snow around her, moving through the trees with a silence that the Mirewood itself seemed to extend in welcome. Her eyes in this form were not grey. They were silver, pure and burning. The color of light on water, of stars reflected in ice. She ran. Not away. She had nowhere to be yet, and no hurry to be there. She ran because the woods were hers in this form, in a way that nothing else had ever been. Because every tree and frozen stream, and buried root system, recognized her blood. And leaned, slightly, in her direction. Because she had been small and cold, and knelt in the snow today, and she was done being small. She ran through the Mirewood for 3 hours, and the snow did not slow her, and the dark did not hinder her. And when she finally stopped, she was standing at the northern edge of the forest, looking out across the wide white expanse of the Valdrim Plains, toward the distant, smudged outline of Stonefell Keep. She sat in the snow. She was, beneath everything, still Vasha. Still the girl who had been born in a burning village 23 years ago. Sole survivor. Raised by a human healer woman, named Osthet, who had found her in the ash, and kept her without questions, because Osthet was that kind of human. The rare sort. Unafraid of the things she didn't understand. Vasha had grown up knowing what she was, knowing what her blood was, knowing the weight of what she carried. Osthet had told her, stay hidden, stay small. The world is not ready for you yet, and you are not ready for the world. Vasha had listened. For 23 years, she had listened. She had let herself be a servant, a rogue, a nameless girl with worn boots and fog-colored eyes, because the alternative was to be seen, and being seen meant being hunted, and she was not ready to be hunted, not yet. She had been waiting for something, and she had not known what the something was, only that she would recognize it when it arrived. She thought, sitting in the snow outside the Mirewood, looking at Stonefell Keep, I think it has arrived. Alpha King Vordrek of Dermholt had spat on her. She touched her cheek. Dry now. The cold had taken it. She smiled again. The same smile from the courtyard, patient and unhurried. Yes, she thought. I think it has arrived. She did not go to them immediately. That would have been reckless. And Vasha, for all that she had a lycan's fury burning in her blood, was not reckless. She was, above all things, deliberate. Instead, she traveled north for 4 days, moving through the snow with a steadiness that unnerved the few travelers who glimpsed her on the roads. A lone woman, moving fast, with no supplies and no companion, whose footsteps sometimes seemed too far apart for a woman her size, as if something much larger had walked there in her place. On the 4th day, she reached the Kolveth Peaks. Most people in Dermholt, if asked what lay beyond the Kolveth Peaks, would say, nothing. Ice. Stone. Death, probably. The mountains were considered impassable in winter, and in summer, only the most experienced trackers attempted the passes, and many of them did not return. Vordrek had listed the Kolveth Peaks in the official cartography of Dermholt as uninhabited waste. He was, like many powerful men, magnificently wrong. Vasha climbed the first pass on human legs, and then she shifted. That slow, oceanic unfolding. And she climbed the second pass on 4 legs that left prints 3 times the size of a horse's hoof in the deep snow. And at the top of the 3rd peak, where the wind screamed and the sky was so dark and close, it seemed to rest on the stone itself, she threw her head back and she howled. Not the howl of a wolf. Not a challenge or a summons or any of the sounds Dermholt wolves used for their coded communications. The sound she made was older than all of those. It moved through the mountain like something geological. Like the mountain itself drawing breath. And it echoed not just through the air, but through the rock. Through the ice. Through the marrow of the earth beneath the snow. For a long moment, there was silence. Then, from deep within the mountain, something answered. The cave they emerged from was not on any map. It had not been found in 400 years of Vordrek line hunting and territory expansion, because it could not be found by anyone who did not carry the blood. 3 of them came out of the dark of the cave mouth. Enormous shapes, white and silver, and one the grey-black of deep storm cloud, their silver eyes burning in the dark. Lycans, the eldest of their kind, the ones who had been hiding for so long that hiding had become the texture of their existence, the way water becomes the texture of a fish's world, without the fish ever thinking about it. The grey-black one, oldest, widest across the shoulders, moving with the particular deliberateness of something that has lived so long it no longer bothers to hurry, stepped forward and regarded Vasha for a long moment. Then it sat. An acknowledgement. An ancient gesture among lycan kind. The sitting before an equal. Vasha shifted back to her human form. She stood in the shrieking wind at the mountain's peak. Barefoot. Her breath barely misting in the cold that should have been killing her. And she looked at the 3 elder lycans and said, simply, he spat on me. The grey-black elder, whose name was Drouth, and who had been alive when the 1st Alpha King of Dermholt was still a pup learning to shift, made a sound deep in his chest that was not quite a growl and not quite a word. The other 2 exchanged something that, in their massive, still faces, passed for a significant look. Drouth shifted. He took a long time about it, longer than Vasha, the unhurried movement of something ancient unfolding itself, and when he stood in human form, he was a white-haired man of indeterminate age, whose eyes remained silver, even in this shape, which was how you knew. He spat on the Queen of the Lycan Blood, Drouth said. His voice was the sound of stone. Tell me exactly what happened, she told him. She was precise. She remembered it all with perfect clarity. This was another quality of Lycan Blood, the precise retention of everything significant, the way the body archives its own humiliations for later use. She told him about the frozen courtyard, about the horse, about Vordrek's gauntleted hand on her chin, about the 12 guard wolves and old Brenoth's face at the roadside, and about the spit, and about kneeling in the ice. When she finished, there was silence. And you laughed, said Drouth. Yes. Why? Vasha looked at him. Because I knew that I would remember that moment for the rest of my life, and that he would not remember it at all. Not until I made him. Drouth was quiet for a moment that stretched like ice over deep water. The old laws permit it, he said finally. He has degraded the blood. He has touched a Lycan queen with intentional contempt. The laws of the old blood, the laws that predate his pack, his kingdom, his entire line, give you rights he cannot rescind and powers he does not know exist. He paused. What do you want from us? Vasha looked out over the mountain and down toward the white plains of Durmholt, far below, invisible in the storm, but there, she could feel the territory the way you feel the heat of a fire from several rooms away. I want to go home, she said. This is not your home. No, she agreed. But it will be. She did not return immediately. That, too, would have been wrong. A charging approach, a frontal declaration, the dramatic reappearance of the woman he had exiled. That was not how she intended to do this. Instead, she spent the remainder of the winter in the Kolveth Peaks, and she prepared. Drouth and the two elder Lycans, Weasolve, the white-furred female who was the oldest of all, and Bruck, the young one, only 2 centuries old, taught her things. Not the basics. She had been born knowing the basics, the way all Lycans are born, knowing how to shift, and how to scent blood, and how to run at speeds no wolf can match. They taught her the higher things. The old language of Lycan command, which operates at a frequency below hearing, below the range of wolf senses, a vibration that speaks directly to the ancient, pre-rational part of a wolf's brain. The part that remembers, from before the kingdoms and the hierarchies, what it means to be in the presence of something categorically more powerful. They taught her the blood declaration, the formal act by which a Lycan queen asserts her sovereignty over territory. Not an aggressive act exactly, more like the sky deciding to rain. Not hostile, simply irresistible. They taught her the law of Lycan restitution, which was 12,000 years old, and had not been invoked since the burning of the eldest pack, in the age before memory, but which was nonetheless binding on all wolfkind, encoded in their blood, unkillable, by any decree that any Alpha King had ever made, or could ever make. Winesolve, who communicated mostly in ancient Lycan and gestures, pressed both enormous paws against Vasha's chest one evening, and looked at her with silver eyes that held 4,000 years of watching the world make its mistakes. You are ready, she said, in the old language. You have always been ready. You were only ever waiting for the reason. Vasha pressed her hands against Weisolv's massive, warm face. I have the reason now. Yes, said Weisolv. He gave it to you himself. She left the Kolveth Peaks on the first morning of early spring, when the snow was still thick and undisturbed, and the world was white in every direction, but the cold had changed, barely, subtly, the way a held breath changes in the last second before release. She came down the mountain in her lichen form, and the sun, rising behind the peaks, hit the snow around her and scattered light in all directions. And anyone watching from a great distance, if anyone had been watching, would have seen a white shape descending the mountain in what seemed like its own halo, moving with a certainty that was not the certainty of speed or aggression, but of something else entirely, the certainty of something returning to where it belongs. She arrived at the southern border of Durmholt territory on a morning when fresh snow had fallen overnight, and the plains were unmarked and brilliant, and she crossed the border in human form, dressed differently now, not a servant's dress, but the colors of old blood, deep gray and silver white, simple and without adornment, which on her looked more formal than any court dress the keep had ever housed. She had a name, now, not Vasha the Rogue, not Vasha the Nameless. She had spoken the blood declaration at the peak of the Kolveth Mountains in the old language, with Drouth and Wesolv and Brack as witnesses, and the earth had responded, which was how a blood declaration worked, not on the approval of any king or council, but on the response of the territory itself. The ground had trembled, the snow had shifted. Somewhere in the boughs of the Mirewood, every tree had moved slightly, leaning in unison toward the source of the declaration, the way sunflowers lean toward light. Her name was now Vasha Kolvreth, the second half being not a house name but a territorial name, the name of the mountain range she had claimed as her blood seat, which under the old laws predated and superseded any claim Vordrek's line had ever made. She walked to Halvek's estate first, not to resume her position. She was not there for that. She was there for old Brenoth. She found him in the yard behind the estate, splitting wood in the thin morning light. He was 83, as noted, and the axe was heavy, and he was slow. He heard her footsteps in the snow, and turned, and when he saw her, the axe dropped from his hands. "Vasha," he said, and his voice was the voice of a man seeing something he had hoped not to see, and dreaded not seeing, the voice of someone caught between two fears. "Brenoth," she said, "you saw something in me at the stream. You said your wolf recoiled." He was silent for a long, miserable moment. "What did your wolf recoil from?" she asked, and her voice was without anger or accusation. Genuinely curious. She had wondered about this. Brenoth looked at his hands. "It wasn't recoiling," he said, very quietly. "I said that because I was afraid, and old, and stupid." He swallowed. "My wolf, what my wolf did, was kneel. In the water, in the middle of a shift, without my permission." He looked up at her. "I had never felt anything like it in 83 years. Vasha nodded slowly. "Why did you report me?" "Because I was frightened of what it meant." He sat down heavily on the chopping block. "I have lived my whole life in this pack, in this hierarchy. Under Vordrek's father, and Vordrek's grandfather, I know what I am allowed to be afraid of, and what I am not." He looked at her with old, tired eyes. "You were something I was not allowed to be afraid of, so I made you into something that could be dismissed." She was silent for a moment. "Go inside, Brenoth," she said. "Stay inside today." "Why?" "Because what happens today will be very loud," she said, "and you are too old for noise." He went inside without another word, and she heard the bolt slide home, and she thought, "Good man." Even in his mistakes, even his fear was honest. Word had preceded her. Somehow, perhaps through the old connections of the Mirewood, perhaps through the inexplicable communication that runs through wolfkind below the level of conscious awareness, by the time she reached the gates of Stonefell Keep in the midday light, there was already a crowd. Not a summoned crowd, not an assembled court, Wolves who had stopped what they were doing because something in their blood had said, "Come, come and see." They stood in the snow on both sides of the road, leading to the keep's great iron gates. Dozens of them, eyes shifting between human and wolf amber as the instinct moved through them in waves. They were silent, not the silence of ceremony, the silence of held breath. The gate guards, to their great confusion and increasing distress, could not make themselves close the gates. They tried. They put their hands on the iron, and their arms would not cooperate, and they looked at each other with the expression of men whose bodies have become suddenly, inexplicably unreliable, and they understood, vaguely, that what was coming through the gate did not require their permission, and that their permission had, in fact, never been relevant. Varsha walked through the open gates of Stonefell Keep on a clear, cold morning in early spring. She walked alone, because she needed no one. The inner yard of Stonefell Keep was wide and paved in grey stone, now blanketed in snow. More wolves gathered as she walked. Servants, guards, packmates, all of them pulled by the same tide in their blood, arranging themselves without coordination on either side of the path she walked, not quite sure why they were doing it anyway. The air had a quality to it, an electricity, like the sky before a storm of unusual size. Alpha King Vordrek came out of the keep himself. He had been told, several messengers competing to be first, that someone was at the gate, that the guards had not closed it, that people were gathering. He had come out already irritated, already reaching for the authority that came to him as naturally as breathing, and he stopped at the top of the broad stone steps when he saw her. He recognized her. Of course he did. Humans think recognition requires time. Wolves know better. He recognized her in the way a wolf recognizes the scent of something significant. Before thought, before analysis, before pride could organize a response, he stood at the top of the steps, and she stopped at the bottom, and they looked at each other. Behind him, his 12 royal guards arranged themselves, hands on weapons, faces arranged in threat. The banners snapped overhead. Snow fell in slow, enormous flakes, the lazy, heavy snow of a storm that means to last. "You were exiled," Vordrek said. His voice was steady. He was, above all, a man who controlled his voice. "I was," she agreed. "On pain of death." "Yes." "Then you have returned to die." "No," said Varsha. She tilted her head. The same gesture from the courtyard, months ago, in front of Lord Halvek's gate. "I have returned to take what belongs to me. Nothing in Durmholt belongs to you." His voice dropped into the register he used for commands that he expected to end conversations. "You are a rogue. A nameless, packless." "I am Varsha Kolvreth," she said. And she said it in the old language, as well as the common tongue, layering the words, and the sound of the name in the old language moved through the crowd of wolves like a physical thing, like wind across a wheat field, and 30 wolves, simultaneously, without coordination, without understanding why, went down on one knee in the snow. Vordrek stared at the kneeling wolves. His expression underwent a journey. Shock, fury, calculation, a first dark flicker of something that was not yet fear, but was standing in fear's doorway. "What is this?" he said. "Get up. I command you to..." "You cannot command what I am commanding," Varsha said pleasantly. "Not because I am overriding you, because I precede you. The blood I carry is older than your line, older than the pack system, older than the laws you enforce. You have authority over wolves. I am not a wolf." He was very still. "I am Lycan," she said. "Queen of the old blood, by declaration and by the response of the territory. What I stand on has been mine since before your great-grandfather was born. And your exiling me was as meaningful as a child drawing a line in sand and telling the tide it cannot cross. Silence. Then, kill her, Vordrek said. The 12 royal guards moved. She did not shift immediately. She let the first two reach her. Enormous wolves, the best fighters in Durmholt, battle-hardened and bonded to their Alpha King's command. They came in fast, low, teeth and speed, the way Durmholt wolves were trained to close the distance before the opponent had time to react. They hit her and stopped moving. Not because she physically stopped them, because they're wolves, not their minds, not their training, not their loyalty, but the ancient animal living inside them that predated all of those. Their wolves refused. The instinct was below choice. It was the same instinct that makes the ocean pull back from a shore before an earthquake, the body knowing before the mind does. Both men fell back. One of them simply sat in the snow with the expression of someone who has walked into a room and forgotten why. The other shifted partially, involuntarily, and then his wolf lay down in the snow and would not get up. The remaining 10 guards slowed. Vordrek looked at what was happening to his best soldiers, and something moved across his face that he had never, in 40 years of commanding the most powerful pack in 5 territories, had occasion to feel before. He felt small. It was entirely new. He did not recognize it at first. Then recognition arrived, and it was unbearable. Vasha looked at the guards who had stopped mid-advance, their wolves pulling them back against their wills, their faces a gallery of confusion, and the specific shame of being betrayed by their own bodies. Stand down, she said, addressing them. Not their king. Your wolves are not malfunctioning. They are recognizing something very old. There is no shame in it. Go stand with the others. They went. Not all at once. There was a moment where human pride and wolf instinct fought inside each of them, visibly, like a candle guttering in wind. But they went. Vordrek was alone at the top of the stairs. He could see, from where he stood, that the entire courtyard had knelt. Every wolf below him, his subjects, his pack sworn, his guard, was on one knee in the snow, not from command. He had not commanded it. It had happened on its own, the natural declension of wolfkind, in the presence of something their blood had not forgotten, even when their minds had. He had never been so alone. He reached for authority, for the Alpha Command. That deep frequency pulse that every Alpha King can emit, the sound that drops wolves to submission, regardless of what they think about it. And he sent it out like a fist. Nothing happened. He did it again, harder, pulling on his bloodline, on 40 years of dominance, on the weight of his pack bond and his ancestral claim, and every ounce of power he had ever used in his life. The kneeling wolves moved not at all. Vasha felt the command hit her like a mild wind. She blinked and tilted her head and said, with what appeared to be genuine sympathy, "Your Alpha Command does not reach me, Vordrek. Alpha Commands are a wolf thing. I am not a wolf." "You can't," he started. "I can," she said. "And I will. But first," she climbed the first step, and then the second, moving without haste, the slow enormity of her purpose making speed irrelevant. "First, I want you to remember something." She reached the step below him and looked up. "The snow," she said. "The courtyard outside Lord Halvek's estate. And do you remember the morning?" He stared at her. "You sat on a horse," she said, "and you looked down at a girl in a servant's dress and worn boots. And you held her face in your gauntleted hand, like she was something you'd found on the road, and you spat on her." She paused. "Do you remember that?" A long silence. "Wolves are watching," she said. "All of them. Yours and others. What you say in this moment will be what they remember about you forever. So I will ask you again, carefully. Do you remember that morning? Vordrek's jaw tightened. You were a rogue. A nameless. I was the Lycan Queen, she said, still in that even, unhurried tone. I was wearing worn boots, and I was cold, and I had done nothing to you, and you spat on my face in front of your guard, and your subjects, and old Brennoth, who I think will carry the weight of what he did for the rest of his life. She climbed the final step and stood level with him, and she was not, in human form, particularly tall, only as tall as his shoulder, but something in the air around her had a dimension that her body did not account for, a presence that occupied more space than her physical form suggested was possible. Vordrek, who had never stepped back from any living thing in his life, stepped back. She watched him do it. She said nothing about it. You had two choices on that morning, she said. You did not have many. Power forecloses options. That is the cruelty it does to the powerful. You could have been indifferent, which was the best you could do. Or you could have been cruel, which was the worst. She looked at him steadily. You chose the worst. And then you laughed, on the road back to your keep. I could hear it. Lycan hearing is, she paused, better than you would imagine. What do you want? He said, and his voice was no longer steady, and they both heard it, and there was a sound from the crowd below that was not quite anything. Not satisfaction, not pity, something in between. I want Dermholt, she said simply. This is my territory. My bloodline has held this. For 400 years, she agreed. I know. It's an impressive run. But it is run. She let that sit. The old laws do not negotiate. They predate negotiation. By returning to Dermholt land, by invoking the blood declaration, by standing on this ground which my blood has claimed, I have already taken what is mine. What you choose now is only about what happens to you. And what? His voice had gone strange. The voice of a man navigating territory he has no map for. What happens to me? Vasha looked at him for a long moment. The snow fell between them, slow and indifferent. That depends entirely on what kind of man you are, she said. Not what kind of Alpha King. What kind of man? He chose wrong. Of course he did. The story would be a different one. A shorter, quieter one. If he had chosen otherwise. But pride is not a garment a man removes when the weather changes. It is closer to skin, and removing it is closer to flaying. Vordrek made his choice that night. He had been escorted, with extraordinary courtesy, which made it worse, to his own great hall, where Vasha had taken the seat he was accustomed to occupying, and had been doing so, with the ease of someone who has been waiting for a chair to become available, and has finally had the opportunity to sit down. She had met with the pack elders, and the border lords, and the heads of the vassal families, one by one. And each of them had come out of those meetings with varying expressions, ranging from bewilderment to something approaching relief. And all of them had bent the knee before they left. Vordrek had watched from the high windows of his own chambers, where two of Vasha's guard, former Dermholt wolves, now answering to a different command, stood at the door. By midnight, he had decided. He had always been, at his core, a man who believed that the world was his because he was strong enough to hold it. 400 years of his bloodline supremacy had never been effectively challenged, and in the absence of effective challenge, a man's convictions about his own centrality become geological, immovable, foundational, to everything built on top of them. He could not accept what was happening. He did not have the architecture for it. He broke out of his chambers by going through the window. 3 floors, a drop that would have killed a human and severely damaged a wolf, which he was, and which it did, and he hit the courtyard snow and shifted mid-fall, his wolf form absorbing the landing, and he ran, not away. That was the thing that sealed it. He did not run away. He ran to the Meyerwood. This was, as many of his choices had been, understandable by its own internal logic, and catastrophic by every other measure. He knew the Meyerwood. He had hunted its edges. He believed, as all Dermholt Alpha Kings believed, that the forest was a boundary of his territory, manageable, and mappable, and his by right of claim. He went to the Meyerwood to call reinforcements. There were old power sources there, old magics that the Alpha Kings of Dermholt had been taught to access in times of dynastic crisis, buried compacts made by his ancestors with certain things in the deep wood, in exchange for advantages whose nature he had never inquired about too closely. He reached the old compact stone at the heart of the Meyerwood, at 3 in the morning, and found it already occupied. Onesolve, eldest of the Lycan elders, 4,000 years old, and white as the inside of ice, sat beside the compact stone, with her silver eyes burning in the dark, and she was looking at him. She had been waiting. The Meyerwood had always known where its allegiances lay. The compacts his ancestors had made, the old trades, the blind bargains, had been, all along, with the oldest blood, with the Lycan blood. His ancestors had not known what they were dealing with, which was typical of powerful men who are accustomed to getting what they want, and do not see why they should need to understand exactly what they are getting it from. Waysolve rose, and her rising took a long time, and was terrible to watch. She made no sound, spoke no threat. She simply looked at him with 4,000 years behind her eyes. Vordrek's wolf, the part of him that had never once submitted to anything in his entire life, the part of him that had been the most dominant creature in 5 territories for 4 decades. It submitted. Not gradually. All at once. A total, catastrophic, humiliating capitulation. The way a building does not slowly fall, but reaches a moment where it is simply no longer standing. His wolf lay down on the forest floor, and would not respond to his frantic internal commands, and Vordrek, Alpha King of Dermholt, sovereign of 5 territories, the man who had spat on a girl in the snow, and laughed on the road home, knelt in the Meyerwood alone in the dark, and shook, and Wisolv watched him, and the trees watched, and the buried roots, and the frozen earth and the winter sky watched. He was there until dawn. They brought him back to the keep with the morning light, and Varsha was in the great hall. She was sitting at the high table, with Drouth on one side. Drouth in human form, white-haired and silver-eyed, and taking up more space than his body justified, and Brak on the other, young by Lycan standards, his eyes moving over the assembled wolves with the casual attention of someone reviewing a situation they already understand. The hall was full. Every major wolf in Stonefell Keep, pack elders, border lords, guard captains, the heads of every significant family in Dermholt territory. They had come because their blood told them to come, and they stood now in the high vaulted hall with its hanging banners, and its smelling of old fires and pine resin, waiting with the stillness of people who understand that what they are witnessing is historical. Vordrek was brought through the great doors. He was not bound. No one had bound him. He walked in under his own power, and he was still a physically impressive man. The cold night in the Meyerwood had not reduced his size or altered his face. But something about the way he occupied space had changed, and every wolf in the room felt it before they could see it. The particular, unmistakable quality of a dominance that has been broken. It is not a visible thing, exactly. It is felt the way a shift in air pressure is felt, in the body, below conscious thought. He walked to the center of the hall and stood. Varsha looked at him. He looked at her. "I have a question for you," she said. "It is the same question I asked in the courtyard. I am asking it in front of witnesses this time, because the answer deserves to be heard." He was silent. "Do you remember the morning outside Lord Halvex's estate?" she asked. The hall was so quiet that the snow could be heard, settling on the roof. Vordrek looked at her for a long moment. "Yes," he said. "I remember." "Tell them what you did," she said. His jaw tightened. He said nothing. "Tell them," she said again. And there was something in her voice. Not force exactly, but an inevitability. The feeling of standing at the edge of a cliff, and knowing that whether or not you step forward, the falling is going to happen. What you did to a lone woman in the snow. The silence stretched. "I spat on her," Vordrek said, and his voice was barely recognizable as the voice of a man who had commanded armies, who had judged and sentenced, and pronounced with the ease of someone for whom authority was the air he breathed. The sound that moved through the hall was not triumph. It was something more complicated. The sound of a collected group of people, revising a foundational assumption. The specific discomfort of having followed a man for decades, and discovering that the man was smaller than the following had led them to believe. "Why?" Vasha asked. He looked at his hands. "Because I could." Another sound moved through the hall, quieter this time. "Because you could," she repeated. She let that sit for a long moment, the way a stone sits in still water after you've dropped it. "That is the most honest thing I have heard anyone say in a very long time." She rose from the high seat. "It is also the last honest thing you will say in this hall. From this point forward, you will say very little. Not because I forbid it. I am not interested in forbidding. Because what you say carries no weight here. Not from this morning." She came down from the high table and walked toward him, unhurried, and every person in the room felt the air change as she moved through it. She stopped before him. "I am not going to kill you, Vordrek," she said. "I want you to understand that clearly. Killing you would be simple, and simple things are often confused with just things, and they are not the same." She looked at him. "What I am going to do is far more difficult for a man like you to survive." "What are you going to do?" he asked, and his voice was quiet, genuinely asking. "I am going to let you live as a minor border lord in the territory your family has held for 400 years, she said, "with no pack bond, no alpha command, no sovereignty. You will be in the official records of Durmholt, which is now a Lycan protectorate, and will be called by the old name, Colvreth Plain. You will be listed as a private landholder. No title, no authority, no subjects." She paused. "You will be, in every meaningful sense, what you tried to make me." The hall was very still. "A rogue," she said. "A nameless, packless, powerless man, in a servant's dress with worn boots, standing in the snow." No one spoke for a long time. Vordrek stood in the center of the hall, with the eyes of every wolf he had ever commanded on him, and he was silent. And his silence was a different kind of thing from Vasha's silences. His was the silence of a man discovering the exact shape of his own life, in the moment it changes irrevocably. The silence of someone falling, the long moment between the edge and the ground. The seasons changed, and then they changed again. Spring came to what had been Durmholt, softening the snow to slush, and then to mud, and then to the wild flowers that grew in the plains below the Mirewood. Small, white, frost-touched at the edges, which Brack informed Vasha were called in the old language lichen blooms, and had been growing in Colvreth territory for as long as anyone could remember, which in the case of the lichen elders, was longer than the concept of as long as anyone can remember, was designed to accommodate. Vasha sat at the window of Stonefell Keep. Her keep, now. On a morning when the last of the deep winter's snow was melting from the courtyard stones, and she watched it go with the expression of someone watching something that has served its purpose depart. She thought about things in the particular patient way she had always thought about things. She thought about Osthet, the healer woman, who had died 3 winters ago, before all of this, quietly in her bed with her hands folded and her face peaceful. The way people die when they have not wasted anything. Varsha had been with her, and Osthet's last words had been entirely characteristic. "You've been hiding for too long, little catastrophe. Go cause some trouble." Varsha had laughed, and that laugh had been genuine too. The same genuine laugh that had so unsettled Vordrek in the courtyard, because Osthet had always been the reason she could laugh that way, had taught her, without meaning to, that laughter could be a form of power, just as well as a form of surrender, and that the difference was in what you knew when you made the sound. She thought about old Brenoth, who had come to the keep the morning after the confrontation in the hall, and asked to speak with her. He had brought a gift, a carved wooden cup, rough-hewn, not a valuable thing, but made with his own hands, which were old and slow. He had set it on the table and said, "I was afraid, and I was a coward, and I made it worse for you when it was already bad enough, and I am sorry." She had accepted his apology and the cup, and she had given him a seat at the border council that she was building, because he was 83, and had been in the territory longer than anyone, and knew its geography, the way you know the lines of a face you've looked at every day for 80 years. And that was worth something. He had cried a little when she told him. She had pretended not to notice, which seemed like the right thing. She thought about what the 12 guard wolves had looked like when their wolves lay down in the snow, involuntarily, unable to override the ancient recognition. She had felt, watching that, something that surprised her. Not triumph exactly, but a deep, geological sadness. Not for herself, for what they had built. All of them together, all the wolves in all their packs, with their hierarchies and their submission structures, and their carefully maintained rankings. They had built something that had allowed a man to spit on a woman in the snow and ride away laughing. They had built the conditions for that. Every submission, every unquestioned command, every moment of cruelty that passed without consequence, because the powerful could be cruel, and the powerless had no recourse. All of it had accumulated, over 400 years, into that moment in the courtyard. She was not, she had decided, interested in building something like that. The Lycan blood laws that she was now drafting with Drouth's council were different from pack law in their essential character. Pack law concerned itself with hierarchy, with who commanded whom, with the rankings of submission, with the precise and carefully maintained articulation of who was more powerful than whom. Lycan law concerned itself with obligation. Not the obligation of the weak to the strong, but the reverse. The obligation of the strong toward whatever was in their care. The law of what power owes. It was a different kind of architecture. It would take time. She was patient. Vordrek lived in a house on the eastern border of what had been his territory. It was not a small house. She had not given him a small house, because small houses would have made him a martyr, and she was not interested in making him a martyr. It was a decent house, stone-built, with a good hearth and a stable, and a view of the plains that on clear days extended to the white line of the Kolveth peaks. He lived there alone, or nearly so. 2 servants who had chosen to stay with him. No pack bond. The dissolution had been done quietly. A matter of Lycan law that he had no mechanism to fight. No alpha command. No title. Some of the wolves in the surrounding area still called him my lord out of habit, and then caught themselves, and the catching themselves was its own small cruelty, every time. He could feel the territory around him. Wolves always can. It is a constant sensation. The pulse of the pack bond, and the land and the alpha chain that connects them. A low vibration, like a heartbeat felt through stone. He could feel it. And he could feel that it no longer answered to him. And this, more than the house, more than the dissolved pack bond, more than the absence of title and authority. This was the thing he could not adjust to. He could feel the territory answering to her. The Kolvreth Plains, as they were now called, answered to Vasha Kolvreth, and the answering had a quality that his 40 years of dominance had never produced. Not the answering of submission, but the answering of belonging. The way a tree belongs to soil, and soil belongs to water, and water belongs to all of it together. The way things are interconnected, that were designed for each other. He felt this from a distance, and the feeling had no name in the language he had been raised to speak. On the first anniversary of the day she had walked through the gates of Stonefell Keep, he stood in his yard in the early morning and looked out at the plains and the distant keep, and he tried, carefully, honestly, for possibly the first time in his life, to understand what he had done, and why, and what it had cost. Not him. He understood what it had cost him. He tried to understand what it had cost her. That morning, the cold, the worn boots, the gaunted hand on her chin, the act itself, the deliberateness of the insult, the riding away, and the laughter on the road. He stood in his yard for a long time. He thought. She laughed. At the time, it had infuriated him past the point of reason. He understood now what the laugh had contained. He understood that she had laughed because she knew something he did not. Not just about herself, but about how these things tend to move through time. How cruelty is never as final as the cruel intended to be. How the world eventually rights itself because it was built on laws older than any king. She had laughed, because she already knew how the story ended. He had not. He stood in the snow, because it was snowing again. It was always snowing in this country. The snow was the one constant, indifferent and democratic, covering lord and servant, and alpha king, and exiled rogue with the same patient, unhurried white, and Vordrek, of the house that had no territory, put his face up to the sky, and felt the cold on his cheeks. He thought, this is what she felt. The cold, the indifference of the air, the feeling of standing in an enormous world that does not arrange itself for your comfort, that continues on its own business, without consulting you first. He had never, before this year, felt the cold as anything other than a thing his power could compensate for. A fire built, a fur put on, a keep with good walls. He had never felt it as the thing it simply is. He felt it now. And somewhere, far away across the white plains, in the great hall of Stonefell Keep, Vasha Kolvreth sat at the table that was now hers. Not the high seat. She had removed the high seat. She preferred a round table. And she was meeting with the pack elders of three territories. And the fire was warm. And the conversation was careful, and serious, and concerned with the obligations of the strong, and she was, quietly, building something. She was not thinking about him. She never thought about him. That was the thing, the final, brutal arithmetic of what had happened. The thing that was more humiliating than any public defeat, more enduring than any loss of title. She had moved on. She had always been moving on. He had been a morning on the road. A cold morning. A cruelty chosen from an available menu. A laugh on the way home. He had been, in her story, an inciting detail. A match struck that lit a fire that had been laid long before he arrived. He had thought he was the main character. He had been the catalyst. The snow fell on him in the yard of his decent border house. and the plain stretched out white and indifferent to the horizon. And at the edge of sight, just barely visible, the Kolvath peaks rose against the sky, white and permanent and entirely, spectacularly, unconcerned with what he thought. He went inside. He was, after all, cold. Some wounds choose themselves. Some fires are not started by the arsonist, but by the thing the arsonist doesn't see. The thing that was already burning, quietly, waiting for exactly enough air. He gave her air. He didn't know that was what he was doing. That is how it always goes with men who are certain of their own centrality. They cannot imagine that the most significant thing they will ever do is something they considered beneath consideration. She laughed. She knew. The snow remembered all of it.